Sorry.
If you do not understand white supremacy, what it is, and how it works, everything else that you do understand will confuse you. In all of these nine areas of activity, economics, education, entertainment, labor, law, politics, religion, sex, and war. Anywhere on the planet, minute by minute, day by day, all of the time, all of the time.
Good morning and welcome to another edition of the Counter Racist Code Show with Mr. Neely Fuller Jr., also called the CRCS for short. And we are live on the air this day, Tuesday, the 6th of April, 2021. Mr. Fuller's on the air. He is in Washington, D.C., and he will be with you momentarily. The numbers to call to get in contact with this show is 516-453-9921. And be sure to depress the number one button, and you will get in line for the call. And then you may answer your questions. Keep in mind, if I cue you in, you can be heard. So you don't have to ask, can I be heard? You can be heard. And if you can't, then I would let you know, so you don't have to do that. That way Mr. Fuller can get right to your questions. If you would like to Gmail me, you can at the numeral 7, Mr. Bobby, B-O-B-B-Y, @gmail.com. And you will get in rotation on that. You can also get into the chat room, as a few people have already got into the chat room, so we thank you for that. That fills up quite a bit. Okay, I think that's all the house cleaning that I have to do. Keep in mind this also, that all the materials that you will need for this program can be obtained by going to producejustice.com. That is producejustice.com. And all the information that you would need concerning this show and anything else, books, upcoming shows, but there are also past shows on there. And if Mr. Fuller is going to be on the Carl Nelson show on WOR Radio, 1450 on the AM dial, he will also let us know when they tell him. And if he tells me before time, then I will let you know so that you can tune in. That way everything is where it should be. Okay, I think that's all. I'm sorry?
W-O-L.
Yeah, W-O-L. Mm-hmm. Yeah, W-O-L Radio, the Carl Nelson Show. And when he gets the information, then he will give that to me, and then I will relay that to you. Okay, let's start off today's show. And, of course, when I do that, guess what? My screen goes blank. But anyway, let's start off today's show. From last week, a caller, Mr. Fuller, you had said something about what you eat. And somebody wrote in, Derek wrote in and said this. Derek, yeah, this is what he said. He said, a few weeks ago, a caller asked Mr. Fuller foods he eats. Mr. Fuller responded, vegetable soup and lots of beans. I found a brochure reprinted by the National Cancer Institutes and Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Mr. Fuller was absolutely correct about his food choices, and I just want to thank him for sharing that wisdom. Stay safe, Derek G. He's also from Washington, D.C., the DMV, which stands for the District of Columbia, Maryland, and Virginia. So, Mr. Fuller, he just wanted to give you thanks for that. And do you eat that almost every day or some combination of that or what?
Well, I do. Just about every other day for sure. beans with a combination of spinach cooked, because there's been some recent talk about spinach being having some type of poison in it.
Mm.
And so if you cook it, though, that, you know, whatever that problem is, it kind of goes away. Spinach and lettuce of some types, romaine lettuce. There's been some talk about leafy vegetables having some type of poison that comes from the soil that has to do with the way people handle it and all of that. I don't know all the details. But they said if you cook it, it should be safe, particularly spinach. So you put your spinach in your beans and, you know, you make soup. And spinach, if you boil it with the soup, just boil it slightly. The spinach and soup and the beans and cauliflower, mixed vegetables of different types that you get in a bag. Sometimes you can get it, it goes into the microwave, steam. That's the way I do it sometimes. And then dump it into a pot. And you got a variety of soup with a lot of vegetables in it. Grape tomatoes. And you don't want to put too many items in there, but have a pretty, just about everything you can think of that's supposed to be healthy in the vegetable line.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I do. And just put it in there and with plenty of chicken broth and water or vegetable broth. And I just try it, and it's tasty, and I eat it. I think the lunch wagon should come up with soups, particularly in the wintertime.
Mm-hmm.
You might add some noodles and maybe some... slice up some roasted chicken, put that in there too. They say, well, wow, it looks like you're going way beyond soup. You're going to have something else now if you keep putting stuff in there. But it doesn't work out that way. It seems that way it might. If you put a lot of items in there, which I do. And but it's very tasty.
Okay. Do you eat any breads or anything like that?
I kind of stay away from breads. I do.
Okay.
You know, but if I use bread at all, it'll be wheat bread. But I've been advised that you don't necessarily need a lot of bread. Bread, you kind of stay away from it because it's not the healthiest of foods. Bread really isn't.
Okay.
It may be, you know, but... people have always depended on bread down to the ages. That's what they say, your daily bread, you know. That's even biblical.
Mm-hmm.
But the way they make bread, that's what it comes down to. What bread is really healthy? I'd have to find that out myself. If there are any breads that are put out that are super healthy, that are really going to give you energy and nutrition, rather than just fill you up and weight you down, which is what a lot of artificial foods do.
Mm-hmm.
They just fill you up and weight you down. They don't give you any energy at all. The more you eat, the less energy you have. And that's not supposed to be with any food. Food is about energy.
Yeah.
Food is supposed to make you come alive, pep you up, make you want to run around the block, I mean, on your hands. Okay? That's what food is supposed to do, not the other way around. Weight you down, make you feel tired, fatigued, and your heart begins to give out. And most of what many things that they sell across the counter that are supposed to be nutritious and tasty and energizing, that last thing, many things, don't give you any energy at all. It takes away your energy. It saps your energy. So you're blowed up. You look like you're getting stronger, but actually you're getting weaker and fatter. But you're getting weaker and fatter. You're blowing up like a balloon, But it's all air and no energy. It's all dead calories. It's not real food. Imitation food.
Mm-hmm.
Same way that the white supremacists are doing with sex. Imitation sex. And a lot of other things. Imitation religion. Everything imitation. Everything artificial. No substance. Mm. No calories.
Okay. Yeah, in the chat. In the chat room, JMCL5078 says that he also cooks like that, Mr. Fuller. He says that I bake my soup in the oven in stone pottery. Do you use have you used that method yourself, or you just put it on top of the?
Maybe I should look into it. There's lots of things I have to look into, and you know, I just don't know. We're in a confusing society.
Mm.
The system of racism has made everything so confusing. You look at the ads on television. Take this type of medicine. Take that type of medicine. But watch out for the side effects. Now, the medicine will cure, allegedly, about two or three things. But the side effects, well, when you take this now, it'll ruin your kidneys. And it'll definitely, put your liver out of business forever. Mm. I mean, it just goes on and on and on.
Yes.
You look at the side effects, and the side effects list, it's about 200 things there.
Yeah.
But you won't cure your headache. You won't have a headache, but you'll be dead.
Wow.
That's basically what they're saying.
Okay. Well, anyway, Derek, I wanted to make sure that you got that message, and his friend or cousin in North Carolina, Roland, appreciated that also in Charlotte, North Carolina. We're going to get on with today's show. D.D. Carr, thank you for your suggestion. And here we go. We're getting ready to go to the callers. Matter of fact, we're getting ready to go to Darnell. And this is what we're going to say, or try to say. Darnell, you are on and you can be heard. What is your question for Mr. Fuller?
Good morning, Mr. Bobby. Good morning, Mr. Fuller.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
I have a question, Mr. Bobby. Is it okay if I do a VGQ and a question?
Very quickly, yes, sir. Go ahead.
Okay. My VGQ is on Tuesdays from 9 to 11. I enjoy spending time with Mr. Bobby, Mr. Fuller, because staying on code has made my life, my overall lifestyle, much more satisfactory and much more productive. And my question for Mr. Fuller is, what do you mean by the quote that you have on the front of the book and on the front of the United Independent Compensatory Code System Concept book? And it's throughout the book a couple of times, and it's in the back with the concepts, general concepts for quotations for thought, speech, and action, and it is the statement. If you do not understand white supremacy, racism, what it is and how it works, everything else that you understand will only confuse you. What do you mean by that, Mr. Fuller? Thank you.
What I mean by that is that's the dominant influence on the planet. And if you don't understand the thing that governs everything that you do, you're going to be confused about everything. And I'm saying, and it's either true or false, and everybody should always think about that, because I could be making a huge mistake. But I believe it, because it was only when I began to look into racism and its effects that I began to understand the entire world that I live in and all the things that apply to me in every area of activity, economics, education. When I go to school, what are they teaching? Basically, they're teaching the glorification of white supremacy. But I didn't know that until I put it in that frame of reference. I didn't think about it that way. I've sat in, you know, history classes, civics classes, political seminars and all that. But I couldn't put it all together if I left out the factor of racism. Because when I started looking at everything being tainted, you might say, and maybe I shouldn't, everything being poisoned, I prefer to use that word, by racism, then everything always came into view. I mean, everything came together real quick. If I always thought of now, okay, I'm in this seminar, and they're talking about religion, or they're talking about sex, or they're talking about war, or they're talking about politics. If I immediately put my mind on, now, everything that they're talking about is going to be within the context of racism. Can't leave out racism. You're talking about labor or law and how the laws are written and what they apply to and who they apply to. You leave out racism, you're going to get confused. If you're talking about labor, you leave out racism, you're going to get confused. If you talk about economics, the use of time and energy, trade laws, money. If you talk about politics, border crossings and all that, you're talking about racism, 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 racism. Everything is drowned in racism. And when I started looking at the entire world like that, everything became easier to figure out. That whatever, if I was just having a conversation with somebody on a bus or whatever, whatever the conversation was about, and I left out the factor of racism, I always felt like I should be scratching my head because it's something that doesn't add up here. It's something that I'm not considering that's left out, but I don't know what that something is. And so I start frowning up. You know, I can't quite put my finger on it, but there's something missing in this conversation. But if I throw racism in that mix, then everything came clear. Everything. Just jump right out at you. And that's what I meant by that statement. If you do not understand white supremacy, what it is, and how it works, everything else that you understand will confuse you. Any kind of contract you make, you get ready to buy a house or anything, you leave out racism, you're going to go into a head-scratching mode, meaning when you're scratching your head, it means there's a question somewhere, or a dozen questions, or 10 dozen questions, which means what? Where there's a question, there's what? Confusion. Answers to the questions get rid of confusion. And when you attach to racism to every question that has to do with people on planet Earth in 2021, when you attach racism to it, everything comes clear real quick. I mean, it just rushes to the head of the line. Why? Because it's the truth. That's why. Racism affects everything and everybody 24/7. And everything is soaking in this thing called racism in the form of white supremacy, unfortunately.
Okay. All right, Darnell, thank you for your call. And I don't have to tell you, but I say this anyway. Don't be a stranger. Okay, Terry in Pennsylvania, we're getting ready to Pittsburgh, we're getting ready to get you. But, Mr. Fuller, I was asked to ask you, when you mentioned about spinach, there are a few of us that hadn't heard of that, some of it being having some kind of contaminant on that. When you do cook it, have you ever cooked it in olive oil with fresh spinach, in olive oil and garlic?
I put a little bit of olive oil in some soups that I make.
Yeah, okay.
And but for the most part, I just put in vegetable broth that comes in the box. And,
okay.
I also put in olives. I have a jar of olives and whatnot, and I just put in as many olives as you think you like. If you like olives, which I do, And but now for years, people have asked me about nutrition.
Yeah.
But I'm not a nutritionist. I'm just a person just like everybody else. I go to the cabinet and I see what I can. I go to the refrigerator. I see what's there to eat. And so I make the most of trying to eat healthy because I want to be healthy.
Yes, sir.
But I want to say it to everybody out there, you have to be careful about recommending foods. I'm just talking about what I eat.
Yes,
but
sir.
I may not be eating this all the time, or may stop eating it altogether, because in this world in which the racists don't care about poisoning people, and actually will use poison, and have proven that down through the years, to kill people deliberately. If you start putting out a list of things that black people should be eating, well, the racists know how to take care of that, because they say, I provide the food for the entire world. So if that's what black people are going to be eating, I'm going to put something in there that's going to poison their brains. So they're going to walk around acting crazy all day, and they ain't going to know why they're crazy. But this particular food is real popular with them, so I'm going to see to it that most of the food that I ship to them that's real popular with them, it's going to be poison. It's going to poison their minds, because I know how to make poisons that will go to just a certain part of the body. It won't affect their body will be full of energy, but they'll be as crazy as they can be. Because when it gets to a certain part of their brain, this particular food is going to poison that part of the brain.
Mm-hmm.
See, so you have to be careful about what you recommend in the system of white supremacy, because if you're black, you're subject to the system of white supremacy. It's not any magic food coming from outer space. You get your food from them, directly or indirectly.
All righty. We will move on to Terry from the beautiful city of downtown Pittsburgh. Terry, you are the caller, and you can be heard. What is your question for Mr. Neely Fuller, Jr.?
Well, first of all, grand rising to both of you gentlemen, Mr. Fuller and Mr. Bobby.
Yes, sir.
I just want to state that I'm a therapist calling from beautiful downtown Pittsburgh. That's what I said.
Yes.
And we had a group, a special interest group, and we were discussing about the racial unrest in this country and around the world, and how we as therapists might best help people who are suffering from it, which is all people of color, but that was the question. And when I mentioned that racism is white supremacy, the group of people that was consistent of white people, black people, and other people of color, people got really upset. Power dynamic that, you know, there really is one form of racism, and that's white supremacy, full stop. The therapist of Keller became a little agitated, and they told me, well, we don't know how to present this to the superiors because that might offend them. How will we present this to the superiors? How can we speak from our own voices? And I asked the question, well, whose voice are you going to speak from? They didn't know what to say. So I'm going to ask you, Mr. Fuller, what might be a good approach to speak to these people who really earnestly want to help other folks that are suffering from this supremacy and causing them a lot of problems? That's my question.
Thank you, Terry. Mr. Fuller?
I always tell people, when you with white people and black people and you're having meetings talking about problem solving, never bring up race. That might be surprising coming from me, but that's code. You are not the person to bring it up, according to the code. Why? Because it's not it doesn't get constructive results. So you always want to come out of something with the results that you went in for. That's code. You want the results. So I'm writing a book on racism. I'm talking about racism right now. That's the centerpiece. But you don't start off that way. You start off always talking about the production of justice, which is where you intend to go ultimately anyway. And then what you start doing is putting the filling in that pie, which is basically you start off saying, well, the end product is a thing called justice. That's the center stage project that you want, that you're aiming for, meaning guaranteeing that no person is mistreated. And you have to define it now, not just talk about justice in the abstract. You say, what is justice? See, all problems are solved through the process of questions and answers. So when you're in these seminars or in these meetings, and even just if it's a so-called informal meeting, you're at some white person's house that you've been invited to come to talk about it, solving black people's problems and white people's problems, the problems in general. Always make center stage. Well, this discussion basically is going to be about seeing to it that justice prevails. Now, what is justice? That's a question. But the code says it is, guaranteeing that no person is mistreated and guaranteeing that the person that needs help the most gets the most constructive help. 24/7, all over the world at all times, in economics, in education, entertainment, labor, law, politics, religion, sex, and war. Because if you don't have justice in all of the nine areas of activity, you're not going to have it in any. Because wherever you don't have it, out of that nine areas, if you're mistreating somebody in one of those areas, or if somebody is not getting the help that they need in one of those areas of the nine, it means that all the rest of them are going to become unraveled anyway. So then you have nothing, which is what you started with, but what? Non-justice. So we're trying to produce a product that's never been produced. So you always, your discussion should be about, if it's got anything to do with people, problem solving with people, it's about justice. Now, people will say, well, when do you get to talking about racism, since what you're saying, your whole book is about racism? Talking about justice is going to lead to a discussion about racism automatically. Why? Because it's the biggest obstacle to justice. Racism, in the form of white supremacy, is the biggest impediment to producing justice among the people of the planet called Earth. So anytime you're talking about producing justice, it's going to lead to a discussion about racism. So you always wait for somebody else to open the floor to talk about racism. And the way you do it, according to the code, you just ask, well, what is racism? What form does racism take? Are there different forms of racism? Who is a racist and who is not? What is the most powerful form of racism? See, stick to the questions. If you're the person who intends to get to the talk about racism, don't make statements about racism initially. Only make the statements when everybody else is engrossed now in talking about racism. They want to talk about racism. They have agreed to talk about racism. That way the white people who are at that meeting are not going to be nervous in talking about it, because they're the ones who start talking about it. And so, but you stay in the question lane. And you can ask and say, well, somebody say, well, there are different forms of racism. Now, people are making statements. And you say, different forms? Okay, what are the different forms of racism? Mr. Halifax, you know, since you made that statement, what, you know, you stay in the question lane, even though you might have called for the seminar to be given. But mostly you stay in the question lane. Start off talking about justice. Well, what's the best way to produce justice? What is causing most of the non-justice in the world, folks? And never move to the second question before the first question is asked.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Thank you, Mr. Fuller. And thank you, Terry, from beautiful downtown Pittsburgh. Don't be a stranger there. Okay. You are listening to the Counter Racist Code Show with Mr. Neely Fuller, Jr., and I am your co-host, Mr. Bobby. To get in contact with the show, you may dial 516-453-9921, and be sure to depress the number 1 button, and you will get in rotation so that we can get your call or question answered by Mr. Fuller. You can also Gmail me at the numeral 7, Mr. Bobby, B-O-B-B-Y, at gmail.com. And it will also go into a rotation, and it will come up, and I will inform you of the date and time when your Gmail is read so that you can play it back if you'd like to. Chat room is now open, and occasionally I'll have an opportunity to read some of those chats. So be mindful of your brothers and sisters on the line. Remember, everything you write is forever in cyberspace, so just keep that in mind. The Counter Racist Code Show with Mr. Neely Fuller, Jr. We will continue here. Let's see here. Where are we going to go? Okay, let's do this one here. Now, I don't have a name here, but, caller, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to cue you in. You can be heard. And if you'd like, you can give your name. But what is your question for Mr. Fuller? Okay, I got you in here. I apologize because I don't have your name up here, but you can be heard now by Mr. Fuller. What is your question? Caller? Okay, going once, twice. Okay, caller, we don't have you on here. So we will go on to the next questions here. Let me see here. Let's go to this one right here. Okay, from the Gmail. This is from DivaTude, I think. Yes. Says, hello, Mr. Fuller, last week you said sex was black people's greatest motivating factor. But I want to know if you think anti-blackness is black people's greatest motivating factor. I say this because you say black people love to show off to other black people, but for what reason? To feel better than the next black person? To make themselves feel better about their circumstances, black people will engage in dangerous sexual activities for gratification or hatred of thyself? If so, then, that would mean anti-blackness to me is the greatest motivating factor for black people. We are trained to run away from or attempt to destroy anything that is black like ourselves. I want to know what you think, Mr. Fuller.
Well, there was a whole lot of statements mixed in with some questions. So I just start with the first question. See, all problems are solved through the process of questions and answers, and you never move to anything after that first question, until that first question is answered. So what's that first question?
Black people love to show off other black people.
No, the question.
Other black, yeah, I'm getting ready. Hey, well, I'm reading it as it was written. For
yes,
what
sir.
Reason? To feel better than the next black person? She had a question mark at the end of it. So is that it? Black people want to show off to other black people? To feel better
yes.
than the next black person?
Yes. The answer is yes. Black people like to show off to other black people. They can't show off to white people. They ain't got nothing to show.
Okay.
That's it. And, you know, I made a flat statement there. They ain't got nothing to show. So they're going to show off if they want to gain in prestige and whatnot with other black people. They show off to other black people because just like prisoners of war, everything that prisoners get comes from the prison masters. So when black people show off their new car, their new house, their diamond rings and all like that, they show it off to white people. And white people say, what are you showing it off to me for? I gave it to you. You don't have nothing that I didn't give you. I mean, you don't have a fancy car or a fancy house or a fancy anything. You don't even have yourself. I give you your education. If you want some credentials and whatnot, you got to get them from me. So what are you showing off to me? And I just gave it to you. I just gave you a new suit of clothes, and you come around the next day showing them off to me, your brand new clothes. I'm the one that gave you the clothes. You wouldn't have no clothes, Negro, if I didn't give them to you. So you don't have nothing to show off to me. So you go down there in Negro Town and show it off to the people that look like you. They'll be infatuated. They'll look up to you, and they'll say that you're somebody. You finally arrived, and you've been somebody. But you wouldn't be nobody if it wasn't for me, Negro. Get out of my face. I got other things to do, like prepare other stuff that I'm going to give you to show off at a price. So
okay.
That's what that's about. That's
okay.
Why black people, we on our jobs, we're looking forward to doing what? Going to have a party. Who's going to be at that party? Other black people. And what are you going to do at the party? You're going to show off. Show off your new barbecue pit or something. Something that the white supremacists provided. Show-offism. It's listed in the book, the four show-offisms among black people throughout the world.
Okay, throughout the world. Okay, then the next question was, black people will engage in dangerous sexual activities for gratification or hatred of thyself. If so, then would that mean that anti-blackness to me is the greatest motivating factor for black people?
The greatest motivating factor for black people is white supremacy. So black people do a lot of things in all areas of activity, not just in sex, but sex is very powerful. So black people show off sexually in every way that they possibly can. This is why the white supremacists are very busy and have been for the last 20 or 25 years, ramping it up, spreading all types of confusion in the area of sex among all of the non-white people of the entire planet. Why? Because they know that sex is very powerful. And if you can manipulate people like you want to manipulate them sexually, it's easy, very easy, to manipulate them in all the other areas of activity, including religion. You can get people to change their religion. If you can manipulate their sexuality, they'll make all kind of modifications in their religion to accommodate what? Their sexual urges. And we see all kinds of signs of that in the newspapers every day, in some of the major religions. I mean, right now, billions of dollars are being parceled out, sometimes quietly, to settle what? Something in the field of law that has to do with religion, that has to do with sex. Sex in the churches. Some people, doing things, that, well, does Does the religion say that this is great? Does it call for this? And some people who have the religion say, no, I don't know about this now. I mean, because after all, we got some underage people here, and we got, we got a lot of people who are religious leaders who are doing some things that, we better settle this, and act like it ain't happening, or pay somebody off, or we better come up with some millions of dollars and whatnot, and this is very embarrassing, and et cetera, et cetera. See, sex is very powerful.
Okay.
Sex is very powerful, and it will erupt in places where people don't want it to erupt.
Okay. All right, Divitude, thank you for your Gmail question here. Mr. Fuller, before we move on, there's been some reports. I have not seen this, but according to, I guess it's geoengineeringwatch.org, I guess there's some information on the spraying of harmful chemicals to block the sun from shining, or whatever the sun is supposed to do. Have you heard of this?
No.
Okay.
But according to the code, if somebody has heard of it, put that information out there, if it's helpful or if it's harmful. Information is power.
Mm-hmm.
So I've heard.
Yeah, it was from someone on the chat room had mentioned that, but gave the address for more information about that, geoengineeringwatch.org. Okay, before we go to John in Houston, Mr. Fuller, let's talk about your book. We've been talking about it all throughout the program so far, but let's give some specifics about your book, the title of it, how we can get it, and so forth.
The title of the book is The United Independent Compensatory Code System Concept. That doesn't mean anything until you look into the book and it's explained. And that's not put there just to confuse people. It's put there because that's the title of the book and the subject of the book and the goal of the book is to employ something called the United Independent Compensatory Code System Concept. That concept is, first of all, it's a concept, meaning it's an idea that, in my opinion, the non-white people of the world should look into as an antidote for the system of white supremacy, which means you can use this concept and go, have it go from a concept to a practice. You practice the concept, and then you should get the result, and the result should be replacing the system of white supremacy with the system of justice. So the entire textbook is about a textbook workbook for thinking, speaking, and or acting each and every day, wherever you happen to be, if you're a person of color, in such a manner that you bring about the replacement of the system of white supremacy with the system of justice. That's what the book is for. You as an individual, what you can do each and every day, wherever you happen to be on the planet called Earth, and you're classified as black and or non-white, what you can do that will maximize your ability, first of all, to minimize the harm that white supremacy does to you as an individual and help you also to fight and hopefully, the concept says, eliminate the system of white supremacy and replace it with something better. And what would be better than the system of white supremacy, the logical thing that would be better? A system of justice, in capital letters. Replace the system of white supremacy with the system of justice. That's the logical process. And the book is supposed to help you to do that as an individual person. by what you do and what you say each and every day wherever you happen to be. And the concept is if you get enough people following that code of thought, speech, and action, what you think, what you say, and what you do, the system of racism will evaporate. And following through, not just getting rid of racism, lots of things need to be gotten rid of in order to come up with a product called justice. Now, the book is supposed to be designed to help you to do that on a daily basis. And you can get it by going to producejustice.com. Producejustice.com. And there's two volumes, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And one is the general concept and things to do, suggestions about what to do, questions to ask, things to look for. And then there's a word guide, how to use words, what words to ask questions about when other people use them. Because one of the main things in the code book is about asking questions. Why? Because all problems are solved through the process of questions and answers. There's no exception to that. Every problem that's ever been solved was solved through the process of questions and answers. So there's a lot of questions in the book and a lot of conceptual answers. Conceptuals mean ideas for answers. Might not be the answer, but it gives you some ideas about what the answers might be. And if you try them, they might work. And don't, if you try something and it doesn't work, you try it again and it doesn't work, be careful about trying it again. Be careful about trying anything again that doesn't work. Always go for the things that work. But you can get the book, the volumes, by going to producejustice.com.
Oh, right.
Black people need something that works.
Okay.
Get rid of all the stuff that's not working, and that's a bunch of stuff that we're doing that is absolutely not working.
All right, Mr. Fuller, thank you so much. All right, here's our order, tentatively. We'll do John from Houston, and then, let's see, Raymond from Georgia, and then Ferlin Petras. At least that's the order. Let's hopefully we can get that in. Okay, in the 972, we're going to go to John from Houston. John, you're going to be on with Mr. Fuller, and you can be heard. What is your question? Hello, John? John from Houston going once. Okay. All right. Okay. Hello?
Yes, are you there?
Yeah, who's, is this John?
Yes, sir. This is John. How are you doing?
Okay, yeah, okay. Got to get in there before I have to click you off. Go ahead, John. What is your question for Mr. Fuller?
Okay, Mr. Fuller, have you ever heard the term white guilt?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and in my research, I came upon the Crest Theory of Color Confrontation by Dr. Welson. And she did say that this mechanism has served to mitigate the guilt whites occasionally feel for constantly feeling the need to aggress against blacks and other non-white people. Now, when we, I guess my question is when we recognize this and we follow the code to counteract the behavior that comes from this guilt, what type of emotion should we naturally have when we're counteracting this type of guilt that they have, this guilt that the whites are having?
Oh, you just go by do's and don'ts. Everything is do's and don'ts. What you say, you make sure it produces a constructive result. And what you do, you make sure it produces a constructive result. And the emotions that you put into it are designed to make sure that you produce a constructive result. That's all. You can have any kind of emotion. As long as that emotion leads you to do something or say something that produces the result that you intended to be. Like, you know, that's it. It's all mechanical. See, we don't have a mechanical code. We have an emotional code. Just jump up and down and scream and yell and come up with slogans. Black people produce, we produce a new slogan about every 10 years, maybe two or three. Okay? Slogans are fine. They give you direction. Slogans do serve a purpose. But slogans are like crust on a pie. You got to put filling in the pie. Otherwise, you don't have a pie. So we make a lot of excellent crust. We never come up with a pie. What is a pie? Within the context of which I'm talking about. A code, a plan. What is a code? A code is nothing but a plan. And every time you do it, it works. That's what a code is. If it doesn't work, it's really not a code. That's just some stuff that you're doing. Doing a whole lot of stuff, and it doesn't work. And that's what black people are known for. Doing a whole lot of stuff. And when you add it all up, a long column of figures, you come up with a zero at the bottom. Now, we can't keep coming up as zero people. Long column of figures, and after all of those figures that you add up, it always comes out with a big fat zero when you draw a line and say, now add up that column of figures, and you just keep getting zeros. Keep getting zeros. Keep getting zeros. Come up with nothing. Well, what's happening, man? Has been any changes? No. Whole lot happening. That was a saying we came up with years ago. Man, there's a whole lot of happening. There's a whole lot of things happening, but ain't nothing changed. And that's why black people, we're losing our minds because we don't have a code. The white supremacists have a code for everything. I mean the exact code. They know exactly what to say and exactly what to do in every circumstance because they have a code for it. Black people haven't even attempted to make a code. We just jump up and down and run around in circles and scream and yell and call that. Well, we're doing something. We're doing something about solving the problem. Yeah, you're jumping up and down and screaming and yelling and trying to come up with a new slogan every now and then to make you feel good. But nothing changes. It's the reason why nothing changes. You don't have a code. That's why. What does the code do? It produces results. Hopefully, results that you were looking
for, God.
Like justice.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All righty. Thank you, Mr. Fuller. Thank you. That was one John from Houston, but let's go to, I think we said Raymond. Raymond, and we're getting ready to cue you in, and you can be heard. What is your question for Mr. Fuller? Raymond from Georgia.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. I'm piggybacking
morning,
on last week on automatic. Mr. Fuller, explain it. So that was on 271 of the code of the word guide. The word guide. So I go to 272. Okay. The third sentence from the top say, they are usually the master of getting non-white people to do things out of emotion rather than use of logics. All right. on automatic. So I'm saying, my question is, in the ghetto, because I'm born in Jamaica, Kingston, Jamaica, in the ghetto, you know, like, the females would be having, like, generation after generation, like, the grandma having 10 kids, then the next generation have 12, then the third, and everybody say it's a struggle to have all the kids. Would that be considered as unautomatic in the system? Mr. Fuller.
Your question is what?
Would, like, seeing generation after generation of people in the ghetto, females having, like, 10 kids, then the next generation having 12, then the next having, like, 15, would that be considered as unautomatic in the system?
You said something about each generation have 20 or 12 or what?
Children going on, black people.
Oh, you mean children?
Producing kids, yeah.
Producing offspring. Now, what is the question about black people producing offspring?
No, I'm saying that seeing them on while each generation going by, like they say, they're struggling to have been like going by in the ghetto, and instead of like slowing it down or something like that, they keep on like more prisoners, as you say, more prisoners in the
Raymond, excuse me, Raymond, there's too much background noise in there where Mr. Fuller and
I cannot understand your question. No, it's not on my end, Mr. Bobby.
It's not on your end?
No, sir. That talking is not on my end with that baby voice and stuff. That's not on my end.
All right. Well, go ahead. I don't know where that's coming from, but okay. All right. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm saying that in the system of racism, like when in the ghetto where people be saying it's hard, no water and stuff, I mean to see generation after generation having more and more, like, you know, and everybody be saying it's still struggling. Is that considered as unautomatic in the system of white supremacy?
Yes, you're saying we're producing offspring, and so we have to spend all of our time trying to just feed the offspring, and we don't have time to think about anything else. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, basically.
So therefore, you have to be a little bit careful about, as best you can, about the production of offspring and trying to see ahead of how many offspring you're going to have and whether or not you can provide for them. Now, this has always been a problem and will continue to be because the white supremacists, they control everything about what's going to be available to the offspring in the form of how many can you send to school, what school. The white supremacists dominate all the schools that matter, okay? And so they know all about population control. So we just do the best we can with that and try to always see to it. And for sure, every female has to understand she's not going to get very much help from anybody when it comes to having offspring. Now, that should be rooted in every female's mind, period.
Sure.
You are not going to get very much help, particularly from what's supposed to be the father of your offspring. Get that out of your head. I mean, keep it in mind that you're on your own.
Okay.
There's no such thing as a black father in the system of white supremacy. Every
All
black
right.
female on the planet has to realize that.
I apologize, Mr. Fuller. I apologize, Raymond, but we have to conclude the first hour. Thank you for your call. Don't be a stranger. Okay, for everybody else who has to go, that has been the first hour of the Counter Racist Code Show, the CRCS, here on Blog Talk Radio and also on ProduceJustice.com. We thank you for all your all your calls and your Gmails and your participation in the show. We look forward to hearing from you next week. If you are going to stay, good. We have a second hour of the Counter Racist Code Show with Mr. Neely Fuller Jr. So stay tuned for that. And that show will commence in about 7 seconds from now. All righty. Good morning, Grand Rajim, and welcome to the second hour of the Counter Racist Code Show with Mr. Neely Fuller Jr., also called the CRCS. We thank you for joining in, and if you have a question, then call this number, 516-453-9921, and be sure to depress the number 1 button, and you will get in line, and your call will be answered accordingly. You can also Gmail me, as Victor Palmer did and a few others, at the numeral 7, Mr. Bobby, B-O-B-B-Y, at gmail.com. And it probably will not be read today, but when it is, I will inform you of the date and the time that your Gmail will be read. I would ask, ma'am, I would ask, sir, that when you do call, or even when you write me, please make it short and concise so that Mr. Fuller can answer the question in a timely manner and give you an opportunity to fully understand the question as well as the other listeners. You know, you don't have to write a novel. Just get to your points, make your points, and then we can go from there. All righty, so I think that is all that we have to do. Okay, thank you again for listening, and don't forget to give the call screener your telephone number, your name. Okay. All righty, let's go to the Gmails here. This is from Furlan Petros. He says this, Mr. Fuller, if the murder of Mr. George Floyd that the world witnessed signaled to white supremacists all over the world that black people are in a COVID chokehold, especially since his murder took place at the beginning of the of COVID. Now, I didn't see the question. Let me ask it again. Can you please ask Mr. Fuller if the murder of Mr. George Floyd that the world witnessed signaled to the white supremacists all over the world that black people are in a COVID chokehold, especially since his murder took place at the beginning of COVID. Okay, there you go. Mr. Fuller?
The black people are in a chokehold that's
a COVID chokehold.
A COVID chokehold?
Mm-hmm.
Well, if he wants to say that, he made the suggestion, black people should think about that. That comes under VGQ. See, he asked a question, but also he's presenting an idea about COVID being a chokehold. Is that the way I guess I'm supposed to understand it?
Yeah. And he called it a COVID chokehold. Mm-hmm.
Well, you can say that. Yes. I mean, you can make that comparison. I mean, that comes under VGQ. He's saying that a chokehold on Mr. Floyd is the same as a chokehold. Black people get choked up by COVID-19. They can't breathe, because I understand that's what COVID-19 does. It attacks your ability to breathe, something that you have to do when you come into the world. You're not even here. Your body is here, but a complete package is not here until what? The doctor says the child is breathing. So now the child is what? They have a word for it. You're born. You're not really born until you're breathing. The child is now breathing. We thought the child was going to be what they call, I guess the word is, stillborn, meaning the child isn't breathing. We got the child's body, It came out of the body of the female, and we have it here. We got it. We're looking at it. But the child is not breathing. So the child is not born yet. It's when that first breath goes into the child and comes out. In, out. Inhale, exhale. Now the child is born. Otherwise, what we have here is just a lump of flesh. So a person can say, we're talking about breathing here. Mr. Floyd, I can't breathe. I can't breathe. The chokehold, choking off. What are you choking? You're choking off air. Air is very important to the body. When the body doesn't have air, you just got a body there. But you don't have a person, as you say. The person is, they say, they pronounce, the person is what? You got a word for it. Gone. No longer here. Say, what do you mean the person isn't here? I'm looking at the person. No, the person is no longer here. You don't have a complete person here. You got some material here, but you don't have a person here. Why? This person or this material that used to be a person is no longer what? Breathing. So you can make that comparison, logically speaking. Like the code says, always follow the logic.
Okay. Always follow the logic. Okay. Mr. Lungisi, Angisi from South Africa has written this, Mr. Fuller, via the email. He says, Mr. Fuller, in your experience, does sending non-white children to male-only and female-only schools produce constructive results?
If it does, what goes on in the school? That's what I mean. You ask that first question, and then you begin to ask dozens of questions. What is, and the next question is, what goes on? What do the people do? Always come down to the doing part in that school. And you get answers to everything that what the people do in the school. And then you ask the logical question that comes up when you're doing anything. The last question, what is the constructive result out of everything that we went through and got the answers to that people do in the school? And you got your answer. But anywhere along the line, if there's anything going on in that school that doesn't produce the result, that's the thing you want to eliminate it so that you get what? Excuse me. A constructive result. Because everything that black people are supposed to be doing now, going to a school, having a party, going to visit someone, going on a job, doing anything, taking a trip, what's going to be the constructive result? Underline constructive. You're going to have a result, all right. That's for sure. But is the result going to be constructive? If it's not, go to the drawing board and see to it that it doesn't happen again, because you are not going to do this again. Why? Because it's not constructive. You are not participating because you didn't see a constructive result. Black people should be the most constructive people on the planet. Why? Because we have a reputation for being the most non-constructive people on the planet. That's why.
Okay. All right, Mr. Lungisi from South Africa. Thank you for the Gmail. Let's go to this John in Houston. John, I'm getting ready to cue you in, and you can be heard. What is your question for Mr. Fuller? What is your question for Mr. Fuller, John? Okay, moving on here. Let me click off here. Okay, looks like, okay, get him out here. Okay. Okay, looked like it was Raymond. I got a few dots up here. Here, let me do this. That's probably my fault here. Okay, now, I don't have your name up here, but I have you in the 815. Did you have a question for Mr. Fuller? Because there's a question mark by your call.
Yes, my name is Justin. My question is, in your book, you say, don't act like a know-it-all. And that most oftentimes white people have more information on a subject than you do. And I find that even if you have, like, good ideas or good opinions, they don't respect it. They got to hear it from another white person in order to even respect or take that into an account.
So what is your question?
Can you just elaborate on why we shouldn't act like we know everything, or even if we do have good information on the subject, we should always stay silent and let them talk?
Oh, yes. What it is, if you have constructive information, and when anybody talks to anybody, black people talking to black people talking to white people, you're always looking for just one thing, constructive results. Otherwise, it's best not to say nothing. That's a constructive result when there's nothing constructive to say. But if you have anything constructive to say, you say it. And you don't pay any attention to the emotions or anything like that. You just think that now, when I say this, I say it with the intention of producing a constructive result. So you go ahead and say it. And then if someone says, well, I don't agree with that, or I agree with it, or I think, you know, if it's something we are supposed to be doing that we're not doing, well, you say we're supposed to be doing it, but I don't think we should be doing it. So if that's the reaction, I'm just giving some examples here. Well, you just say, well, you go into the question mode. Well, why is it we shouldn't be doing it? And if we shouldn't be doing this, what should we be doing? See, always remember, when you go to the questions and answers, every question has an answer. If you stay in that question lane, when things become confusing, you'll get right back on track. If you get confused or you get frustrated and whatnot, just go into the question mode. When someone is acting like they don't want to give you any credibility for what you're saying, credibility meaning they don't believe that what you're saying amounts to anything, then you ask a question. All right, sir, what do you say is the best thing to do about this problem that we're talking about? And don't help with the answer. Once you ask a question, put that question mark behind it. Don't elaborate. Don't start talking about what you think the answer ought to be and give examples and all that. Ask your question and wait for the complete answer to the question. And never move to the second question until the first question is answered. That's code.
All righty. Thank you, my brother. I would call your name out, but it's not on the screen here, but don't be a stranger. Going to the Gmails, this comes from Miss Anonymous, Mr. Fuller, says this. Mr. Fuller, why do black people feel like they have to look perfect or have the best-looking clothes when they go to church, but the Bible told them to come as you are? Do you consider this showing off or them trying to show respect?
Well, here again, we're talking about religion. And the only thing, according to the code, that I can say about anybody's religion, religion is a very touchy subject, very explosive in many parts of the world. People kill each other over religion by the millions, okay? So, What does the code say? It says three things when it comes to religion that I have to say, duty bound. That's why I'm saying we need a code. It's just three things that I can say without going into the details of, like, the illustration that's just given. What is the name of your religion? That's the first thing I ask a person when the subject of religion comes up, if we're going to talk about religion. Just three things. And they're all questions. What is the name of your religion, sir or ma'am? Most religions have names. Number two, what does your religion require you to do? You know, you're talking to the person who gave you the name of their religion, that person's religion. So your second question is, what does your religion, I just got the name of your religion, so what does your religion require you to do? To do in what? All nine areas of activity. Economics, education, entertainment, labor, law, politics, other people's religion, the seventh area of activity. What does your religion require you to do when it comes to you encounter somebody who has a religion different from yours and you're talking about it? What does your religion require you to do? And then the eighth area of activity, sex. What does your religion require you to do when it comes to sex? And all the things you're required not to do when it comes to sex. And then the ninth area of activity, war. What does your religion require you to do when people start being violent? Or when violence is involved, one person against another. Death, destruction, war. The ninth area of activity. All nine of those areas of activity, you should find out from that person, not from somebody standing next to him, but from that person, the person who is talking about, this is my religion. You want to find out from that person's religion, regardless of what you read about it or heard about it from other people. No, you're talking to a person, so let that person tell you what their religion requires them to do in all areas of activity. That's the second question. The third question, because it's not the three questions, is, sir, ma'am, what does your religion require you to do when you interact with me in any one or more of those areas of activity that I just presented to you? All nine areas of activity. And you don't argue, never argue about what the person gives you as an answer. Just catalog that answer so that you will know what to expect of that person every time you see that person. Now, in answer to the question that was asked just a few minutes ago, about religion, that's what you do. And you ask the person, what does your religion require you to do when you go to a meeting? Does it require you to dress a certain way? Is that a requirement? And if it is, why? You can ask as many questions as you want to. Suppose you show up and you're not dressed according to the requirement. What does your religion require you to do if you don't have the clothes that are required for you to go to that building? If you don't do dare walk in this building unless you have on this and have on that and have on the other, don't you come in here dressed like that, because we got requirements. What does your religion require you to do when it comes to dress? Does your religion have a requirement about how you get the resources to get the dress or the garment or the helmet? or the shoes, or new shoes. Your religion might require you, hey, when you come in here, you don't wear no shoes. Take those shoes off. Socks, too. You come in barefoot. That's a religious requirement. So you just want to know.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. And don't argue about the answers that you get. Never argue about the answers that you get when you ask anyone about their religious requirements.
Yes. Okay. There there you have it there, Miss Anonymous. Let's see here. Whoop, I had it right up in here before we go to the phone lines. Let's do this. This comes from Mr. Young, Mr. Fuller. He says this. Mr. Fuller, what is the reasoning behind your use of the term non-white as opposed to all other racial classifications used to classify people who are not white?
Because in the system of white supremacy, it's just three basic classifications, regardless of what the white supremacists say. And they say a lot of things about racial classifications. They come up with all kind of racial classifications that you probably haven't heard of. I hear them every now and then. There's a race called Pacific Islander. I got no idea what a person who is a Pacific Islander looks like.
Yes.
You know, I would not bet money if you pointed out a person walking down the street. And I would not bet any of my money that I know what that person, whether or not that person is a Pacific Islander. I'm looking at the person. And a person says, Fuller, for $10,000, tell me if that person is or is not a Pacific Islander. Pacific Islander? I look at the person and be able to tell whether or not that person is a quote-unquote Pacific Islander. Then they got another category. In answer to the question now, other race, some other race. Now, let's say that I'm an officer of the law, and I say I want a description of the person that just robbed that drugstore. All right, I'm driving my squad car. I'm looking for a person that just robbed a drugstore. Two people got killed. The person that owns the drugstore and his wife were gunned down. And the person is running down the street. They say he had a yellow shirt. Okay, that's one description. You know, that I pick up in a frenzy. And I say, well, can you give me another description? Person said, well, there's some other race. Yellow shirt, some other race. Wait a minute. Some other, man, I'm on my radio now. I'm trying to catch somebody. I'm looking for some other race. Yellow shirt, some other race. Now then I come in, they come in on a dispatcher. Well, we think the person may have taken the shirt off. Because a yellow shirt attracts a lot of attention. So the person may have changed shirts. But we do have it that the person is, for certain, some other race. I don't know what I'm looking for. I don't think anybody listening to me give it out like that would know what you'd be looking for. Given the race of the person, some other race, the racial classification of a person, some of the race. I put it in the textbook for practical purposes because everything in the textbook is supposed to be something you can use. No head scratching. White, non-white, white supremacists. That's it. Black is non-white. Beige is non-white. Brown is non-white. You're talking about colors. Some other race. I don't know what you're talking about. Pacific Islander. I don't know what you're talking about. because I'm talking about color. C-O-L-O-R. I don't know the exact color of a specific Pacific Islander. I don't know the color classification.
Yes, it is confusing.
There is confusion.
Mm-hmm. All righty. Let's do this. We're going to take our little station break early. Listen, you're listening to the Counter-Racist Code Show with Mr. Neely Fuller, Jr. And if you just tuned in and you'd like to get involved with the show, you can call this number, 516-453-9921. Let me say that again, 516-453-9921. Or you can Gmail me. Gmail me at the numeral 7, Mr. Bobby, B-O-B-B-Y, at gmail.com. The chat room is now open. You can put forth some chats if you want to. And some of them will be read. Most of them will not be read, but you're certainly able to do that, and we will do what we can do. As just as Constructive One did concerning the last one about Pacific Islanders and racial classifications. Yes, I don't know what a Pacific Islander is, but Construction One says, "Yep, it's all very confusing, and it really is." But that's what you do anyway. You, if you want to get in contact with the show, and then if you do, make sure that you depress the number one button if you call in, and that will move you in line so that your question can be addressed. Okay, thank you. As we have about 32 minutes left, let's go to Toronto, Canada, and we're going to go to Victor. Victor, I'm going to put you on. You can be heard. Here you go. What is your question for Mr. Fuller? Go ahead, Victor.
Oh, hi, Mr. Bobby, and hi, Mr. Fuller.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning, sir.
Yes, sir. Yes, Mr. Fuller, you've said over the years that, let me just read my question. Why is trying to feel good in a terrible situation a form of insanity?
Because it is.
Why?
Because you're not supposed to feel quote, unquote, good about a bad situation. Feelings serve a purpose. So if people are being harmed and you're feeling good about it, that's a bad situation. Why feel good about a bad situation? Very simple. Feelings are supposed to, they serve a purpose. So you are supposed to feel that a so-called bad situation is supposed to be made into what? A good situation. Because people are supposed to be producing constructive results in every move that they make. So feelings do serve a purpose. Feelings, if you feel pain, that's to alert you. That's like a fire bell going off. You feel pain in your fingers. That's to alert you that something is incorrect about your body. After you come into the world, you will have certain feelings that go with being in the world. Sadness, loneliness, physical pain, mental pain, all types of pains. I don't know how many pains there are, but it's a limited number of pains, and all of them serve a purpose. And the purpose is to alert you that something is in error.
Okay.
A burn feels different from something else. From a stab wound. It's pretty close to it, but it's not quite the same. So you treat a burn differently from you treat, the way you treat a stab wound. And so these are things that you find out by people being stabbed or animals, creatures, or being burned. And you learn by trial and error what to do about it to get rid of the pain. Because the pain is like a fire bell. It's alerting you something is not the way it ought to be. That's what pain is about. And so you shouldn't feel if something in error in your thinking when you are joyful about pain. You are supposed to be alerted to getting rid of pain and not dance around in joy like the pain has been relieved. You can dance around with joy after the pain has been gotten rid of, not while the pain is still there.
Yes, Mr.
That
Fuller,
is a form of
insanity. Oh, okay. Because, like, from my understanding, it's like when you're talking about being insane. Like, I've asked some questions before about the insanity that non-white people are experiencing being subject to the system of white supremacy racism. So, when I was referring to the feeling good, I mean. Our emotions are supposed to lead us to logic, but our current population, a lot of non-white people worldwide are still behaving insanely. So I'm just trying to figure out, like, why is it that when we're in a terrible situation, like, we will overeat, we'll take drugs, we'll try to escape when there's no escape? Because the system of white supremacy is a global system. Like, what can we do to stop from trying to feel good when we're in these situations that we find ourselves in under the system of white supremacy racism?
Follow a code that's designed to eliminate the source of the pain, which is the system of white supremacy. Eliminate it and replace it with a better system. And logically speaking, that better system would be the system of justice, which means guaranteeing that no person is mistreated and guaranteeing that the person that needs help the most gets the most constructive help. Those two elements would make up the system of justice. Replace the system of white supremacy with the system of justice, and you do this by having a counter-racist code that tells you what to do and what not to do in each and every circumstance that comes up. That's the key.
That's
what I've tried to present with the textbook for victims of white supremacy that people can get by going to producejustice.com. You get rid of the pain. The white supremacist system is an insane system. And I want to emphasize this while we're talking about insanity. There's no such thing as mental health. There is no such thing as mental health. You're being mentally healthy in the system of white supremacy. It's impossible. It can't be done. Why? Logically speaking, because the system of racism itself is an insane system. Insanity meaning what? Out of balance with what should be. What should be is a system of justice. You can't have justice and white supremacy in the same universe at the same time. It is absolutely impossible, which means everybody in the system of white supremacy, white people and non-white people, are just as crazy as we can be. And in an insane system, all you can get out of an insane system is insanity. You have to change the system, then you get sanity.
All righty. Thank you, Victor, from Toronto. We are going to go to Aisha in Atlanta. Aisha, I'm going to tune you in, and you can be heard. So what is your question for Mr. Fuller?
Hello, Mr. Bobby and Mr. Fuller. My question is, you stated that the female is on her own should she become pregnant, which I'm aware of. But my question is, what is the point of becoming involved in an attempting relationship if the female may become pregnant and she's on her own? Is it constructive to attempt a relationship and or bring a child into the world knowing the black female cannot depend on the black male?
She's got to think of herself as being the whole world that's going to have a baby. In other words, you're the only person in the world, and you're going to have a baby. That's where you look at it. You're the only person in the world. But for some mysterious reason, you became pregnant and had a child. Your duty is to look out for that child. Because the black male can't look out for himself. You start leaning on him, you're leaning on something that's going to fall. Because he's absolutely dependent on the white supremacists, racist man and racist woman. And they know that they're not going to give him adequate support. And if he doesn't have adequate support, you're not going to have it. So you figure that right from the beginning. I'm going to have a baby, and I'm in this world alone with this baby. And that's the way you should look at yourself. That's the way every black female on the planet, right this minute, within the sound of my voice, should look at herself. These offspring that I have, I can't depend on that black guy in the next room or standing next to me or sitting next to me and who took all these vows and whatnot and who's doing the best he can. I still can't depend on him. Why? Because I can't depend on the white supremacists to look out for him. So how is he going to look out for me? Every black female should have that in mind all the time. How is that black male going to look out for me when he's falling apart himself? Because the white supremacists are going to put pressure on his neck and take all the breath out of him. I can't depend on him. He's going to be running around here doing all kind of stupid stuff like gangbanging. Because he's raised to do that by the white supremacists. So he ain't going to be around no way. I'm
so
going to
be
talking to him.
Constructive to even attempt a relationship?
Yes, ma'am. Go ahead. What's the question?
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. So would it even be constructive to even attempt the relationship?
Yes, because you don't have any choice other than to pair off with another female, which is exactly what the black supremacists want black females to do now. This black male is absolutely no good. He done filled me up with all these babies, and he done took off and making babies somewhere else. I'm sick of it. That's what my mother did. That's what my grandmother did. I ain't making that mistake. Now, a lot of black females are saying that because that is a mistake if you think that he can give you any support at all, because even when he can give you support, he's most likely not to, because the white supremacist got it set up in his mind that he's supposed to be a man by running all over the neighborhood, killing people, and proving that he's a man by doing destructive things, snorting drugs and bringing drugs to you, and even letting the offspring that you're going to have be introduced to it, and all this kind of nonsense. You see all of that. You've been through it. You've seen the people that came before you go through it. Half, if not more, than the people you're associated with who are female. That's what they go through, generation after generation. So you say enough already. So just make up your mind. This baby that I'm going to have, it's not my mama's, not my grandmother's. Grandmother's system is dead. grandmothers used to live in little shacks out by the track, that when you got in a pinch, you could take that baby to grandmother. Grandmothers now are in the same shape that their daughters are in and granddaughters are in. They're in bad shape. They can't take care of nothing. And the male that gave you those babies, he can't take care of nothing. He walks around with his shirt off and his chest all stuck out, talking about, I'm a man. Not when the white supremacists come around. He ain't nothing, and he knows it. Knee on his neck. What you're going to be is a corpse. You get in some white people's space with that man stuff. That man stuff goes over well in the ghetto. You step one foot out of that ghetto, and everybody who is supposed to be all so tough, all these black males out here all over the world, you get in the racist man's face with that ghetto stuff. And I have to say it like that. I have to emphasize it like that.
Yeah.
Because it's a black male. The black female cannot depend on us. Me, Neely Fuller, you can't depend on me. I am a dependent. I'm a prisoner of war. White people tell me what to do and what I better not do. White people decide how much money I'm going to have and how much money I'm not going to have. They decide my fate every day. White supremacists.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to realize that as a black female. Every black female has to realize it. You are by yourself. So you better figure out how do you make it on your own, by yourself, in this world. And you cannot depend on that black male for nothing. And the white supremacists, you can depend on them, but at a price.
Thank you, Mr.
The white man is standing there waiting, saying, now I can take care of you, but it's going to be on my terms. And you know what that means.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Fuller. Thank you, Aisha. And do not be a stranger. Let's go to Stan in Pennsylvania. Stan, I'm going to click you on, and you can be heard. There you go, Stan. Go ahead with your question for Mr. Fuller.
Yes, good morning. I think that previous caller was a good bridge to my question. The question I have, or the first I'd like to make a statement, then I'll go to the question. I'm going to make it very brief. Is that I have a good friend of mine that's about your age, Mr. Fuller. He's approaching 90 years old, and he was involved in the civil rights movement, and he got some really good things done. But I talked to him and also other older people, and they can have very good advice like you have. But sometimes I'll say, well, you know, can I send you this DVD about something, or can I send you this email, or can you send me a text message? And they'll say, well, you know, I don't have a DVD player, or I don't know how to text a message, or I don't know how to use a computer. And my question is, do you think that sometimes persons around your age that you basically still have baggage from your earlier life when things were worse directly and overtly for people of color that you carry today, that you may not recognize a cultural shift with younger people in their advancement and their willingness to handle things in a different manner? I hope you understand what I'm saying.
I think I understand what you're saying, and which is why I say never follow a person. Not Neely Fuller. I tell people that all the time. You can't bank on me. I'm a fellow prisoner. See, I try to say, and recently I've been saying it in most programs, think of all black people as being prisoners of war. Now, when you think of prisoners of war, you've got old people, you've got crippled people, you've got people who are real strong physically, mentally, you've got people with all kinds of ambitions, but they are still prisoners of war. So think of every black person you're looking at, male and female, as a prisoner of war. Because that's what we are. So prisoners of war are equal. So don't look for any black person to lead you nowhere. Neely Fuller cannot be your leader. He's a prisoner of war. He can tell you what his experiences are, just like what you just got through saying. We don't know nothing about text messaging. I don't. You got that correct. We're not supposed to know. We're prisoners of war. The prison masters, the white people who have chosen to be, the masters of black people worldwide, are in charge of all of us. So you can't depend on no black person for nothing. Because every black person that you depend on is dependent on the white supremacists. You're getting secondhand help. I don't care who that black person is, how many billions of dollars they got, where'd they get it? The white supremacists gave it to them. They ain't going to have no $1 billion and the white supremacists didn't give it to them. Money has a source. Food has a source. George Floyd can tell you breathing has a source. That source can be cut off. Cut off by whom? Walking around on this planet. Somebody classified as white at any time. And there's nothing to stop it that's on this planet. Maybe something greater that you pray to can stop it. But nothing walking around on this planet can stop it in the system of white supremacy. Black people got to understand that, where the power is. Black people, including Neely Fuller, does all this talking. But he's a fellow prisoner. Don't rely on him. Rely on logic. I keep using the movie Shawshank Redemption because it's a movie about a prison. If you understand that movie, you understand black people's plight.
Mm-hmm.
But you can substitute the main character in there, who is white, for a black person, and just say, what did that white person, the star of the movie, end of the frame, what did he do? He relied on logic. He knew he couldn't rely on his fellow prisoners. Why? They're fellow prisoners. They ain't got no power, even those that look like they had some, like the little gangs they had and all like that. They weren't the ultimate power. The ultimate power was with the prison masters. So Andy Dufresne figured out how he could interact with the prison masters, not the fellow prisoners. That's a losing proposition. You got to know how to interact with the prison masters.
Yes, sir. All righty. Thank you, Stan from Pennsylvania. And like I always say, since I've not recognized you, don't be a stranger. Okay. Swa, you already know the rules. You're in. Go ahead, my brother.
Good morning, Mr. Bobby. Good morning, Mr. Neely Fuller. I just have a quick
VGQ.
So this on Sunday, I was showing my victim mother some words from your word guy, and it inspired her to buy both the word guy and the code book. And I got it yesterday, so in less than a week, I was able to get your book. So maybe the postal issues are clearing up, or maybe the people who need your book the most will receive it in faster time. And I hope you continue doing what you're doing. I believe it has constructive value. To you, Mr. Neely Fuller, and to you, Mr. Bobby. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Glad you got that book. You know the rule. Don't be a stranger. Okay.
And
let's
thank
go.
You.
Yes, absolutely. Let's go to A in Buffalo. Let me cue you in here. And you can be heard. What is your question for Mr. Fuller, A?
Hello. I wanted to ask you, Mr. Fuller, are there different types of white supremacists? The reason why I ask is because when you turn the news to different stations or maybe read a certain article or newspaper, there seems to be certain white supremacists who are really upset. And an example is like they say like the world is terrible right now, and they just seem displeased and not happy with what's currently going on. So would you say that there's a group of white would you say that there's two different groups of white supremacists? One of the groups is happy how things is going, and the other group is not at this current moment.
In answer to the question, yes. There are always different groups of white people who argue with themselves, among themselves. The system of white supremacy is a criminal organization. It's a criminal system, and they are organized criminals, the best in the world, the most powerful in the world. Nothing is more powerful than the system of white supremacy, but they are all criminals, the white people who are part of the system of white supremacy are all master criminals, meaning they are not only criminals, they are masters at being criminals, meaning there are no criminals who are more criminal than they are and more powerful than they are. They're the most powerful people on the planet, okay? So, what do criminals do? Look at the movie The Godfather. They argue with each other every now and then. Like Pete Clemenza said in the movie The Godfather 1, talking to Michael Corleone. Michael Corleone, going to be in the family business, which is a criminal business, and you can just compare that with white supremacy, a criminal business. He said, how bad is it going to be, Pete? He said, pretty damn bad. He said, I'm going to be straight up with you. After all, the business that we're in, this is the business we have chosen. All right? It's a criminal enterprise. So every now and then, we have a falling out. A falling out about what? How are we going to handle all them black people up here in Harlem? That's what. And we fall out among ourselves about, what we're going to do with them. How we're going to handle the numbers business, which is what we're in. We run all of their business, all right? But every now and then, we have a falling out about how we're going to go about doing it. They ain't going to get nothing out of it but a bunch of misery. Spending their little paychecks on the numbers and whatnot, hoping that they're going to win some kind of thing. They ain't going to win nothing because we're going to take most of all of it, okay? We'll give them just a little bit every now and then to make them think that they're going to get rich. They ain't going to never get rich. We're going to get rich. But we're having a falling out among ourselves, and we have to do this every 10 to 15 years. Been 10 years since the last one, Michael, But, hey, we got to kill a few people, a few of our own people, whip them in line, and then it all settles down 10, 15 years. Then we go back and do the same thing again. Sometimes we call it a civil war, okay? Sometimes we just call it a war. This war is coming up. Hey, we got to settle this war, like Sollozzo said in the movie The Godfather 1. Tom, I hate blood. Blood is a big expense. But every now and then, he was getting worn out, and he's bad for business. So we had to gun him down. It ain't personal. It ain't personal, Tom. It's business. So if you understand big-time gangsters, as they're called, you understand white supremacy. In answer to your question, they operate the same way. But black people do not get ahead regardless of what they do when they fight among themselves. They have called these wars, they call it, so-called civil war. There ain't no such thing as a war that's civil. And it's no such thing as a civilized war, all right? But they got all kind of little cute phrases for all this damage that's being done. People die. That's a terrible thing. Blow up people, blow up babies, burn villages and burn up all the babies that's in a little house, little hut somewhere. Got to do it every now and then. Good for business. It ain't personal.
All righty. Got to leave it there for this week. Thank you, A, from Buffalo. Thank you, and do not be a stranger. Mr. Fuller, we have 3 minutes to go on this show, so I'm going to give you those 3 minutes to speak about your book, and then I'm going to close it out with the thank yous. Go ahead, Mr. Fuller.
The book, like one of the callers called in just a few minutes ago and said he had somebody else. He kept trying to tell people about the book and what's in the book, and a lot of things he was saying to them they didn't understand. He just had endless arguments. It seems like that's what he was saying. So he just had them get their own book. And you can get the book by going to producejustice.com. And the caller said that somebody read the word guide and found out, hey, if I use these words the way that the book says I should use them, I can get something done. And I can clear up some problems that I have. And that's the message that I'm receiving. And other people have told me that. So by getting the book is supposed to be problem solving for you. And you can get it by going to producejustice.com. If you're a person of color, the book is supposed to help you as an individual. Not what you call just collectively. It's supposed to help you as an individual in whatever you're doing. Do whatever you're doing in a way that works best for you. That's what the book is designed to do. Go to it. Get it by going to producejustice.com.
All right.
For people of color.
Good job. Before we go, we'd like to say thank you to all the callers, all the Gmailers. Thank you, Dee Dee, for the suggestion. Jane Lance and Barbara Jones, thank you. Brian, thank you. Mr. Fuller, before we go, real quick question. Kelvin Dubose asked this. Besides being unable to solve the race problem, do you have any regrets?
No, I don't have any regrets at all, because I'm put here to do the best I can. So I don't regret doing what I'm assigned to do, and that's to solve problems. Every person that's born, according to the code, is put here being born for a reason, and that's to solve problems in the most constructive manner. Once I figured out what I was supposed to be doing, I just do the best I can. That's why I use the movie Casablanca as a guide. That guy failed to solve the problems that he was trying to solve. The star of the movie. But he did the best he could. He went as far as he could go.
Okay.
And did the best he could. That's all we all can do. Do the best you can while you're here and then pass on.
All right. Well, with that, we have come to the conclusion of this week's show. So we thank you for calling in, for writing, for your questions. We thank you, Mr. Fuller, for being available to us to answer the questions, and we look forward that we can do this again next week. So thank you, Mr. Fuller. Thank you, callers. Thank you, producers. Thank everybody. ProduceJustice.com. Mr. Fuller, last word.
ProduceJustice.com.
All righty. Thank you, and we'll see you next week. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Thank you.